Did you know buying, selling, fixing houses, and investing in real estate is easier than you think? All you need is help from a couple of experts who flipped hundreds of houses, seen most situations, and are here to share their knowledge with you. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show with Andrew Job and J.R. Reed from selltojr.com.
What's going on, Rounders? Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show for now. This is Andrew Job. I am one of your co-hosts, joined by Mr. J.R. Reed. J.R., how you doing?
Well, we're switching the name. We're changing the name.
Yeah.
It's the Real Estate Boys Radio. Real Estate Boys Radio Podcast.
So nice. You guys will no longer be our Rounders. You'll just be our boys, I guess.
No, I mean...
You can stay Rounders. You can be a Rounder, be a Rounder.
Yeah, you can keep the name. Well, all right, we got a cool special show today. We've got none other than Jonathan Chacone, and we wanted to bring him on today because we wanted him to share the lessons that he's learned scaling his portfolio from 0 units all the way up to 330 units in 5 years or 6 years?
It's been almost 7 years, actually.
7 years.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yes, it has been a long journey for sure. Stressful.
I could only imagine. So yes. we're gonna get into some of the stresses that have happened to you, and you know how you've probably learned to just take the lumps as you go along and just keep on moving, like we were talking about before the show.
Yes, 100%.
So can you break down for us what, because you've been on the show before?
Yeah.
Can you break down for us what does your business look like today? You know, how do you operate? How do you make money? Those kinds of things.
So a lot of people have this misconception that they think that you're going to make money passively. And I just want to say that it's non-existent, because there's always a repair that happens or a tenant leaves. When you think that the property's full, something always happens. So once you get that out of the equation and you look at the numbers and you look at your net worth and you look at things in a different sense, you can actually start thinking about how else can I make money. So I got to find ways of making different types of income, meaning by flipping, by doing other sources of income, essentially. So holding the assets is more for like asset, just like building wealth, you know. It's not really about cash flow. You might cash flow a little bit, and then the next month it just disappears, pretty much.
Well, hold on. Wait a second. So what you're saying is, you own 330 units, but you don't live off the cash flow from the 330 units?
I wish I did. No, I do not. Actually, if you take down everything that I make on a few properties cash flow, but the other ones lose money. So it kind of balances it out. So the losses and the gains kind of just equal it out. However, I've made poor decisions like every investor has, and I've bought wrong at times. And those bad deals have cost me the cash flow from other deals that are cash flowing.
I could imagine. Okay, so let's back up. How did you start? Because you didn't just like decide one day, okay, I'm going to start investing in real estate and I'm going to own hundreds of units right
yes.
then and there.
So do you want me to start when I started or how I just scaled so fast?
No, let's start with like, give us the preempt of like how you started and then like
yes.
for a few
okay,
minutes
cool.
and then we'll get to the scaling.
All part. Right, sounds good. So yeah, so I started in California with my first deal in Santa Ana, California. I bought my first 8 unit, restabilized it, re-raised rents, and then re-cashed out, refinanced like $100,000. And then I used that money to buy in Las Vegas, Nevada. I bought a 10-unit there, and then I didn't see any more deals, so I ended up starting to look around, and I ended up going to different markets. I think I went to Indianapolis, I went to Cleveland, I went to Florida, and then I went to Houston, and I really liked Houston. I really liked the growing population, the Hispanic population that there is here, the culture, and the way things are just exploding out here, so... You know, and then I also looked at the trajectory of Houston, how it's more of a stable market instead of it going like Las Vegas. It goes up and then it gets killed when the recession gets hit. So that was probably one of my main things that helped me move out here. And I loved it out here. And I just moved out here and started buying stuff out here. I started flipping, and then I get an offer from my property in Las Vegas, and I ended up making like $180,000. brought that money over here, 1031 exchanged it.
So you sold the property in Las Vegas.
I did sell it, yes.
Okay. So let's back up real quick before we start getting too deep into it. So
no worries.
You bought the property first in Santa Ana?
Yes.
Okay, what was that?
Well, it was an 8-unit.
8-unit, mm-hmm. Okay. So then you took that 8-unit. Did you sell it and then buy the thing in Vegas?
No, so restabilized it.
Okay.
Finished it. And then re-raised the value of the property, cashed out $100,000 out of it. And then with that proceeds, I ended up buying something in Las Vegas.
Okay, when you said you raised the value, how do you raise value?
So re-raise value by re-change the windows, re-fix all deferred maintenance, and then re-raise rents, of course. The previous owner had owned the property, I think, like 20 years, and he was really just like neglecting it. It was just sitting there, and it was in a really prime location in Santa Ana, California. So the rents were, you know, easily, you just put them on the market and they would rent immediately for like $1,000 a month. They were renting them for like $650, $700.
Super
so
cheap.
It added, you know, the rents went up almost 30%, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a significant jump in value. If you increase rents in properties, obviously the value of the property goes up.
Because that's how, you know, commercial properties are appraised, is by how much gross rents they bring.
Exactly. And obviously comps too.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest one. And the only thing that with that property was just that they were really small units, but we were getting a lot of rents for them.
Nice. So then you decide, I can't find any deals in Santa Ana. I'm moving out of California.
Well, I did not move out. I started looking in other places, and then I found the one in Las Vegas. I literally found it on, I think it was LoopNet.
Oh, so you didn't live in Las Vegas?
No, I did not live in Las Vegas. Oh. No, I would just drive out there on the weekends and work on the property myself. Yeah, yeah.
What was that like?
I would stay in the unit.
Okay.
To like, because I didn't have money.
Yeah.
So I would just like sleep on the ground, on the floor, and just like to avoid paying hotels and all that. So
these first properties, when you said you were increasing the value, you personally were doing the work on them?
I did, yes. I was helping them work on them. Yes. I don't do that anymore, but I was working. It was intense. I would put floor, I would put tile if I needed to.
Dang.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was like, you know, I had a small landscaping company. I wasn't like a ball or anything, you know? So I had to do what I had to do.
For sure. So yeah. You're working landscaping during the week, driving on the weekends out to Las Vegas.
Yes.
From Santa Ana.
Yes.
Dang. And then working all weekend.
Working on the weekends and then coming back and, you know, working in the business. You know, stuff like that.
Holy cow.
So did you think when you bought these, you said, hey, I've got 330 units now, but I don't live on the cash off the cash flow. Going into this, when you bought those first two, did you think that, oh, great, I'm going to buy these?
100%.
When did you, in your career, in your process, when did you figure out that, hey, man, I'm not going to actually make any money off this?
I think it was sometime last year.
Yes. Recently.
When the market started shifting and, you know, we stopped wholesaling and making those big ass licks, those big hits of assignment fees. And then we were like, okay, well, you know, we can live off the cash flow. And then, no, there was no cash flow. There was actually, you know, like, hey, I had to put $10,000 in this account in December. You know, like, there was a few vacant. There was, I think in December we had like 25 vacant units. So it was kind of scary. And then January came by and we had 30 units vacant, and then we got like five people in and then five people left. And then it's like, okay, oh, wow, this is scary. So then we had to let go of staff and we started rebuilding again.
What makes it scary? Like what part of it? Because like, just pretend I don't know what you're talking about. Like what would make it scary if you have that kind of vacancies?
This is what makes it scary. First of all, if you have 30 vacant units, they all have to be ready for rent. So think about the cost of that. So just the turnover on that. So the tenants leave, they leave trash behind, and they leave it messed up. So now, and then if you didn't renovate that unit at the time of refinancing, so now you got to renovate it, you know. So if you didn't do the shower, you didn't, you know, put new floors, so they had been there for 5 years and they just left. Now, how much is that going to cost you? You know, at least $3,000 to $5,000 minimum. That's if you just do the bare minimum, you know?
That's 30 units.
Exactly. So think about the cost of that. So there's your cash flow, literally. So the cash flow goes to that, you know? And then that's not including hurricanes, you know? What happened to us this year? You know, we had two major storms, you know, hit us. I think I didn't spend as much. I think I spent like $10,000 and $15,000 on the other one. But just
that's not bad.
No, it's not.
For it was 330 units.
It was not bad. Oh, I did get a flooded property, but we got FEMA money from that. I think we got $56,000. Oh, so nice. It was not bad. So we got recovered from there. But yeah.
So making that payment every month.
That's probably the scariest thing. Yesterday, Kaylin was like stressed out, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's like, we have a lot of delinquents. That's just yesterday. You know, and we're like, okay, you know, just I try to tell people you have to get used to just being scared. You know, like it should be normal to you. Like it should be like a normal day in the office. You know, like, yes, we have $30,000 of unpaid rent. What is that? What's the problem? Nothing's a problem. It's a normal day in the office. Like we know that these things happen at the end of the month. Most people pay. You know, we filed yesterday 5 evictions, you know, which is normal. 3 of them were from the new property we just purchased, and 2 of them were from our properties. So, yeah, we kind of created a little system for if they don't pay, we just put notices, and we're kind of aggressive with them to pay the rent.
Yeah. So making that monthly note on those properties when you have 30 delinquencies plus – you know,
30 vacant. When it happens, it does happen.
Yeah.
And your account, you know, you got to have a certain amount of money in that account per month. And you're like, we have 40 and it's 90. Like, oh my God, what are we going to do?
Yeah. So what do you do in a case like
nothing
that?
Nothing. Like, we don't do anything because the problem is you have to trust the process. It's a process that happens. And every month it happens. The problem is that, you know, Kaylin's pregnant. She's about to have the baby. So, obviously, she's not in the office as much. So, now it's like, we just got to, like, hey, relax. Let me go into the office. And, you know, we start pushing people. Like, hey, when are you going to pay? And we just, like, we have a delinquent list. We update it daily. Like, when are they going to pay? And it should be updated daily. We should have our staff call all the time, bro. Like, it's like you're
like
debt collector.
Yeah.
You literally are a debt collector. But at the end of the month, usually, everything balances out. You know, we don't have any problems. You know, and then we get release units out, so more income comes in. Right now, I think we have probably about 12 vacant units, which is not horrible, which is about normal, you know. You're going to have vacant units.
Out of 330, that's not bad.
No, it's not. I've heard a lot of investors right now. I got a call yesterday from one investor. He's like, help me lease. I can't lease them out. And it's like, I see people like, he's like, I heard another guy. He has a lot of vacant units. And people are struggling, man.
Right now, for sure.
Yes, it's a struggle right now.
What's the pressure on investors of getting these things leased? Is it undesirable properties? They're pricing rent too high for the area?
I think what happened was people are disconnected with the reality of the market. You have to test the markets. And a lot of the times, like, you know, you get the email and, you know, it tells you, you know, the rents are going to be $1,200. You know, and then you go on HAR and you see it, you know, it says, you know, $1,200. You're like, okay, cool. So I'm shooting for 1200, right? Like I'm going to shoot for 1300. People think that, oh, my units are going to be the best. They're going to look beautiful. And then you put them for 1200 and then they sit there for a month and then crickets. And then what do? You still got to pay that mortgage, you know? So it's like, I feel like you got to adjust in our company, readjust quick. So it's like, if they're not leasing, if we're not getting action, it's like, hey, let's adjust it. We're overpriced. The market is telling us that we are overpriced. Let's lower the rents. Let's get them filled up, and let's go through this recession. And then as time goes on, we start increasing rents little by little.
For sure. Okay, I'm going to jump back for a second.
Sure.
Because I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here. So you buy this property in Las Vegas. You're driving out there every weekend, fixing it up. And then you decide at that point, once you get it rented and stabilized, I need another deal.
Yes.
What made you decide you needed another deal? Because you would think you'd
I wanted to become a full-time investor. I didn't want to just, you know, have a landscaping company. That was the goal, is to become just passive investor, quote unquote.
Get that money while you're sitting on the beach, the mailbox
exactly,
money.
Yeah. That fallacy, literally.
Okay, so you start looking around. You look in Kansas City, right?
Yes, I look Kansas City.
You buy some houses out there.
Well, that was after I moved to Houston.
Okay.
Yes. So, but no, I wanted Houston. Okay. I really wanted Houston.
And so you you were coming out to Houston looking at it as like a place to invest, and that was what made you actually literally move here?
So what happened was that one of my friends, Ruben Chan, he was out there at the party on Sunday, and he kind of helped me start like comping properties out here, because this was right after Harvey. I think it was like 4 or 5 months after Harvey hit. So I was looking at the flooded houses. I was like trying to pick up a few of those. And then I came out here for a birthday party and I ended up buying one.
On a birthday party?
On
trip.
A birthday party. I was like, oh, damn, this is a good deal. I just bought it. And then I just started flying out here and working on properties.
You just kept buying more and more.
That's when I was out here, that's when they offered me, they called me from the other property in Las Vegas, and they said, hey, you know, I have a buyer who wants to buy your property at this price, you know, and you're willing to sell it. And I was like, yeah.
So you didn't even have it listed or anything?
No, the guy came to me.
Okay.
The values jumped that fast. It was crazy.
So how much did you end up making off of, like, stabilizing it, getting it fixed up, and then
180,
selling?
About 180 grand.
And then how long did it take you to do that?
6 months.
6 months?
Yeah, it was the golden age, bro.
Wow.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? It sounds like full-time real estate investing, I mean, that's a lot of money for a short period of time.
It is. It still happens today, you know. It's still happening. You guys just bought a deal. I just bought a good deal. You know, it's still happening. It's just different now, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot different. I think we understand that we're going to have to hold the property for a few years for us to be able to get that high price, you know? It's not – the values are not – I mean, the buyers aren't there to buy that high – you know, value with the high interest rates. It's like literally negative cap rate right now. It just doesn't make sense. So you have to literally like spend money for a couple of years on the property until, you know, the market gets better.
For sure. Absolutely. So you get here, you start buying a couple houses here, flipping them, or were you buying them as rental property?
Yes. So I, one of them I bought for a rental, and then I bought another one for flip, and then I started flipping houses here in Houston.
Okay.
And then that's when I get that call from to sell it, and then I sold that, and then I started buying. I think I bought like 40 units with that money.
So you went, took the 180 grand and went out and bought a 40 unit complex?
No, I bought like a 7 unit, another 7 unit. I bought I think I bought a 10 unit, a 6 unit, and I bought a couple houses.
All these by yourself? You did it all by yourself?
Yeah, all by myself.
Like no partners on any
of it? No partners, no.
Okay. And you did that all, like how quick did you buy those 40 units?
It was pretty quick because you have to do 1031 exchange. It has to be fast.
Oh, so you did it within 90 days.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to.
You bought 40 units within 90 days.
So I take that back. I probably said it wrong. The reality is I bought a 7 unit and another 7 unit, and I think it was 4 houses. The other one is just that I have one loan for the 40 units, and that's how I just piled it all in. But yeah, I pretty much bought – in like a year, I bought 40 units.
Okay.
Here in Houston, not exclusively with that money.
Yeah. So what were some of the you know, challenges that you ran into? Because that's a pretty big jump to just go buy 40 units like that.
So the biggest challenge I had was, is the same challenge that I have today. Right now, a lot of those properties that I purchased then, I did not fully renovate them. So they came with problems later on, you know? So
it's like, what do you mean?
So the budget that they gave me to do the project was not sufficient enough to be able to fully renovate the property. So I did what I could with what they gave me, made it look nice, but the internals were not that great, you know?
But, and when you say internal,
plumbing, the plumbing, the electrical problems, you know, like small stuff like that. It's a constant problem, you know?
And so like, how does that cause problems? Cause you're buying older properties.
Exactly.
And obviously you want to be able to go and do these things like replace the plumbing, electrical, and all that stuff.
That's the best way to do it.
But you can't always do it.
You can't, when you're first started, you can't afford to do it. Yeah. It's a problem. You know, you don't have the capital.
So how do you, like, what kind of issues does it cause now though?
Right now, it has a lot of problems, you know, like...
Or in the future, what kind of issues does it cause?
Just, you know, breakers going out, stuff, ACs going out, things are always happening, you know? So that's probably the biggest problem.
Problems are always happening.
Yes, problems are always coming up.
But as an investor, you know, when you get these rehab budgets, to maximize the value. It's the cosmetics that make the difference.
Exactly, and you're right. But
and so to push the valuations, that's the smart way to spend the money to exit refinancing. But if you're operating it as a landlord,
it's different.
Managing it is yeah, like
it's a nightmare.
Old plumbing, you're going to get calls all the time. So yes. There's a balance there of how do I successfully exit a refinance and an appraisal versus how do I operate this asset long term.
So I came to the conclusion that you have to buy it very deep.
Very deep.
You have to buy it very deep for you can have the ability to spend the money on these properties. You know, I just recently bought, I think last December, I bought a 10-unit, fully gutted it to studs and did new electrical, new plumbing, new sewer lines, new roof, you know, every component of the property is new. So, you know, we just have little problems. We don't hear anything about any problems, you know.
It's basically a brand new property.
It literally is. So, you know, and we did another one with Jabron. We fully gutted it. So that's my new strategy, you know. And I look for better locations. And, you know, you grow as an investor and you graduate to better properties as you get more money and, you know, experience.
For sure. So it sounds like now whenever you buy a property, you're trying to gut the whole thing and just go through it.
Not always. We're not right now we're doing a 32 unit. We're not gutting it. We're fixing it, but we're doing like the plumbing. That the plumbing looks really bad, so we're doing the plumbing, and then we're doing the breaker boxes. We're replacing the breaker boxes, replacing plugs, and stuff like that. But you don't have to rewire a house if it's, you know, decent. But the plumbing, you know, obviously you could get pipes that burst when it gets cold. So we try to fix those big issues. Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. Okay, so the biggest challenges back then was the biggest challenges today, which is dealing with the small issues that come up from maintenance issues.
Yes.
How were you dealing with it back then?
I would do it myself sometimes. You know, I would go and check on the stuff, and if it's something small, I would do it myself or try to fix it myself. When I had like 40 units, it's easy, you know.
Like give an example of something that you
fix. Just like, you know, something gets clogged and just need a little snake, I would just unclog it, you know, just handyman work, you know.
Yeah.
Like change a lock, you know, go paint, whatever needed to get done, I would do it myself at that time. But right now, there's no way I can do it. It's impossible for me to go out there and work myself now.
Yeah, with that many units.
Yes, your mind has to shift from being a doer to being more of like a manager now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you make that shift? Because presumably these are very your assets. Difficult. No one cares about them more than you, but also you want things done a certain way and in a certain quality. So it's, you know, you have an issue of with the plumbing or whatever. You know what needs to be done. You know how it needs to be done, but then trusting someone else to do that so that the issue is actually fixed.
So I usually send my maintenance guy. We have right now, we have three maintenance guys, and they go out and assess the situation. So we really know which guy knows how to do what. They'll go assess it, and then they'll try to unclog, let's say, a toilet. And if it is not unclogging, then we go on to the next, you know, just what like a normal plumbing company does, you know. And then they'll assess the situation, and then if it keeps clogging, then it's like rerun a camera, then reassess the situation. But I really don't think that it's not really about quality. It's about getting things done and about getting it get it done right. Versus before, it was just like patch up, you know, like put a Band-Aid on there and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah, because you just wanted it fixed in that moment. But not fixing it correctly. The Band-Aid means maybe I'm going back there 3, 4, 5 times.
Exactly. And then it becomes an issue. Then you end up, if you look at it in the long term, you end up spending more money. So, you know, those are the things that you learn as you get hit.
For sure.
In real estate.
At what point in your, you know, investing career did you decide, like, I've got to get help? Like, this is not working.
I believe when I was at almost 100 units.
You were running it all yourself?
I wasn't running it myself, but I would hire like guys for like a day and like, you know, pay them a day here, a day there, and kind of just have them do a bunch of little stuff here and there. And that was it. But, you know, at I think it was like 70 to 100 was when we started. I hired my first handyman full time because I was just like, it was hard to like hire somebody because I was like, man, this is a lot of money, you know, like then I got to pay for his Home Depot trips. and it becomes very expensive, you know.
For sure.
So you hired on the maintenance side first before like the rent collection lease.
No, I did have an assistant.
Okay.
She started when I was at like 40 units.
And she was doing rent collection and leasing.
She was doing rent collection, leasing, and she was my assistant. In regards to she would do like when we were to buy a house to flip, she would order the materials and do all that stuff too. So she was kind of just like a personal assistant, you know.
Cool.
Instead of me taking all the beating, she would take all of it.
Yeah. So on the backside of the break, we're gonna get in more to like when you start hiring people and
okay.
that kind of thing.
Welcome back, Rounders. So glad to have you here. We are learning a ton about how to scale and the lessons that you really need to think about in terms of when you're buying, how to operate a portfolio. Jonathan's been telling us everything of just getting to from 0 to 300 and all the lessons learned, but Take solace in this. He's telling us he didn't even have it figured out until about a year ago. So if you haven't started, that's all right.
Yeah, it's true.
We're still figuring it out.
Still figuring it out.
I think everybody, it's a journey, man. It literally is.
Literally. You're still figuring it out. Okay, so before the break, we were talking about how you were hiring.
Mm-hmm.
You hired your assistant who was helping you get through a lot of your, you know, day-to-day tasks of leasing and ordering materials, that kind of thing. And then you hired your first handyman.
Yes.
And that's when things maybe changed for you. How did it change? And you were worried about paying him too.
Yes, yes. So I had, you know, a lot of my friends, I met a few people that started helping me, you know, like get out of that mindset of like I had to do everything myself kind of thing. You know, just hanging around with the right people just changes your life 100%. So, you know, if you can make friends with rich people and people who are more successful than you, hang out to them, you know, kiss their butt, do whatever you got to do to like be around them, because they're going to guide you in the right direction. And, you know, don't listen to the guy who's broke, because they're not going to give you good advice. But I think having good friends who already have big companies, who already owned a lot of real estate, kind of changed a lot, changed my life in a big way, you know, like Boris. And, you know, I had another few friends who owned real estate, and just like the perspective of letting other people do everything for you and you're just watching them and managing everybody and orchestrating the company is just a whole different mindset.
Yeah. And so who do you think really impacted you the most?
Boris Sanchez. Yeah. 100%. And he still does help me a lot, bro, because I'm still, you know, the poor guy. I still in my head, like it's hard for me. Like I already have savings, I already have, you know, everything, and I still drive a crappy car, and, you know, like I don't have a $1 million worth of cars, you know.
Yeah.
But I can have a $500 car if I really wanted to, but I choose not to. I'd rather have savings and invest my money
just in case you have a bad month and you're
like, man. And people don't get that you have the responsibility to perform.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was probably one of my biggest shifts, hanging out with him and other people, not just him, but just like they gave you a different perspective. Like, hey, you need to like let other people do it, and you go out and do what you're good at, is going looking for deals, assessing deals, and finding the opportunities, finding contractors who are going to help you make the properties look good. And, you know, that's what I focused on, instead of me going out and dealing with toilets and stuff like that, you know. However, I still get involved with my property management. I'm not going to lie. I am very active in my property management, because nobody is going to be as involved as you, even though we have two girls in the office who do property management. And then we have, I have a virtual, she's my virtual like VA. She helps me with anything that I need her to do. And then we just hired an accountant, like a virtual accountant that just works for us. So she's balancing our books every day, making sure that things are going in the right places, because it was just such a big company now that we have to have someone full time to do that. And then we have my girl that she helps me too. And then we have three maintenance guys.
Wow. Okay. So let's go back to this one maintenance guy that you hired.
Mm-hmm.
What did you start working on that actually helped you scale bigger once you hired that maintenance person?
I believe it's just freeing my time up to just sit down and just analyze deals.
Really?
Yes.
Just to look at deals, and that was enough to help you start buying.
Well, think
more.
About it. We all know this. The real investors know this. How long does it take to sell a deal? The best deals.
Just like
within
that.
Minutes, it sells, bro. So the best investors are the ones that are getting the deals, not the rookies. They're going to get the worst deals. And it's sad to say this, but it's the reality of our industry, because the investor who's already seasoned, they have money, they have power, you know, with their lenders, they know that they can perform if a deal comes. You know, it's like what you guys just did with your 7-year, you got bought. It's like you can just, hey, you want this deal? You're like, yeah, of course, I'll buy it right now. Like, no questions asked.
I haven't even looked at it yet.
Yeah, I haven't even looked at it. I'll buy it, you know? However, I do look at properties now. I don't do that anymore. I already got screwed a few times. I have to drive by them.
at least have to just drive by.
Yes, drive by. I have to drive by.
Yeah, no, I mean, it happens, right?
What are you looking for when you're doing a drive-by?
If they have meters.
Okay.
And, you know, any red tags.
Electrical,
you know,
meters? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then if it's in the flood zone, that's a big deal. I got screwed just recently in a flood zone property. We fought with the city for over a year.
What do you mean you got screwed?
Like, we bought a property in the 100-year flood zone, and it was condemned.
The property was?
Yeah, it was condemned, but it still had a meter. It fit all my criteria. Meter, you know, I'm good. I come in here, fix it up. And it didn't work. They made me lift the house, I think, like almost 6 feet high. So that cost a lot of money.
Was it on blocks at least?
It was on blocks, yeah.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it cost me a lot of money to do that. And it's just, I ended up just selling the house. So I just recently sold the house and got out of the situation. But it was a nightmare, man.
See, the drive-by is not always enough.
It's not. You have to do more research. You definitely have to do more research. And then if they're here in Houston, they're starting to get very strict, man.
Yeah, there's certain areas of Houston where you know they're going to be all over you versus some areas
they don't care. They want you to do something. They're like, please do something.
But some areas, they're watching with a microscope what's going on in those neighborhoods.
Literally, they are. And sometimes they know that you're doing it, and it really depends on the inspector, man. Inspector in that location that is assigned to there can just make your life miserable or just be like, oh, just look the other way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but it's the reality.
That's the truth, man. Well, man, let's go back to this, you know, making hires and helping that, mm-hmm. like helping you scale by making the hires. Because there's people that are going to be watching this or listening to the show that they're still the guy running around doing all the maintenance. And they want to grow their portfolio, mm-hmm. and they want to get to where they're not working this as a part-time job. They want to be doing this full-time. Like, what kind of advice could you give them about hiring to help them achieve their goal?
They need to find – that's a tough question, because there's many ways of doing this business, obviously, and I don't have the golden path to it. But I will say that you got to hire somebody to just give you less responsibilities, take away the under the $20 an hour stuff. If you can pay someone even $30 an hour to do something that you don't have to do, and that would be amazing. That way you can have more time to look at deals. I still do things that are under $30 an hour because I want to go see it, but I don't have to go if I don't want to. You know, I just choose to go. But I believe that, like, you know, taking calls from a tenant, he just did. Don't do that. doing those little things, it's not worth it. I had a business partner once. He went over there, Derek, and he gave out his number to all the tenants, and they started blowing him up. And you don't want to do that. You got to set boundaries. You know, you go to the property, and you're like, yeah, I'm the owner. The property management company will come and handle you. Like, I'm not involved. I can't. I don't have the mind and the ability to handle more stress than what I already have in my life. And that's a reality.
For sure.
Yeah. You never give your personal number out.
No.
You've got multiple phone numbers and layers before, you know, for them to call in.
Or even a Google number. You know?
Yeah.
You can just give them a Google number. That way you can have a filter. You can be like, I don't want to talk to anybody, you know, or this is a bill collector. I need to answer this. That's probably one of the most important lessons that I've had. I used to go out and collect rents. I used to do all that stuff. And it's just like, just letting those things go is so important. However, it does get hard. You know, I've bought a lot of deals in one time, just kind of like where I'm at right now. I already bought, I think, 6 flips, and I'm in a contract for 2 more. So I'm at like 8 flips. So it's like, now it's like, okay, do I continue buying or do I work on what I already have? You know, so it's like turning off that button. You got to know, and you got to know when to stop because of your bank account. You know, you got to know like, hey, I have $300,000 in credit cards. I have $300,000 in the bank. I think I have 8 flips. Okay, let me make sure that I don't go crazy because I could get in trouble. So assessing that is probably one of the biggest things that you have to see, or either wholesale off the property, you know, just partner with somebody else and wholesale it or something like
just
that.
Just get out of it.
Just to get out of it, yeah, because you don't want to continue to buy and then you end up a wreck. And it's happened to me before. So
how did it happen?
Oh, man. Not good. Well, you just think that you're just going to be able to, like, you're unstoppable, you know? Like, I'm the man. You just keep buying and buying and buying, and then you look back and you're like, I don't have any more money. And even though you think that you're going to be under budget, you end up being over budget. So your 300 grand, if you have 300 grand, is, you know, it's going to get lost in 10 projects. It'll disappear like nothing. So you have to make sure that you don't over leverage yourself, because that's when it gets scary. So I just think that you have to, it has to be a balance. You know, like I get this advice from people, from the big guys, like just focus on acquisitions. Like, no, I have to like stop it. Like, hey, I got to stop here. Let me focus on what I have. Let me get a couple of properties under contract and then I'll move forward. You know,
let me get stabilized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me get stabilized. Let me get some rents in. Let me get these properties going before I continue to chew more.
Yeah, because those delinquent rents will come at the same time that you have the vacancies, at the same time that you're over budget for all your flips at the same time. And, oh, by the way, you're supposed to close on a property that you have under contract next week.
Yes, and you got to bring $15K to the table.
Yep.
Or you got to buy, even if you go 100% financing, you still got to bring insurance. You still got to pay, like, you got to turn on electricity bill. You got to turn on electricity, water, gas, and then you got to start the project. So that's at least 10K, yep. At minimum 10K.
Probably more, because you got to give your contractors a little bit of money to get started.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, people don't, it's happened to me already. Like, that's why I'm like, take it slow, you know.
Plus it's January, so tax man's coming. Property taxes are due.
Oh my God. Well, luckily for me, I have a lender who escrows everything. So I have two properties that are not escrowed. Actually, more now, but I have a few properties that I have that are escrowed and that are not escrowed, and we have to come up with the money. One of them is where my office is at, and you know, like that one, I thought about selling it this year because I didn't want to pay. I think the tax bill is like $21,000. So yeah, it's intense.
Yes, that's $2,000 a month. You got to set aside.
You got to set aside.
Yeah, if that money's going to be there by the end of the year. Right. But now you got a project that's running over, and you got, you know, that's
use that money. Yeah. Exactly, it happens. So you have to think about all these things. So people don't. What I did this year too, JR and Andrew, is that I ended up selling a lot of my houses. Why? Because of the same reason. I wanted to get liquidity, and I wanted to be very liquid, and I didn't want to have these problems, and I don't want to stress. Why stress if I have $150,000 in equity and a few houses, or I can sell this house, make 70, sell that house, make 50, sell that house, make 100, and I could just flush my accounts with cash and be like, feel safe, you know?
Yeah.
So I did that this year. I was like, man, I'm stressing. At the beginning of the year, I was stressing myself out.
What do you mean? So, like, how did you
because
know
this that happened to me, what we just talked about right now. I bought like 10 projects and I was over budget on all of them. And, you know, so many things happened at the same time. Then we had 30 vacant, and then it just like started like feeling like the world was ending, you know? I'm just being very, very transparent. And, you know, my accounts went to like almost 30 grand. And it's like, you know, I can't have a $30 million portfolio with 30,000 in the bank.
No.
So, you know, I had to get a line against a couple paid off properties that I have. Luckily, I have that. So I got some lines of credit against them, and I was able to cash out and use that money to get me going.
That's a scary situation.
It was a very scary situation, but I learned a lot from it, you know, and I grew a lot from it, and it made me a better investor today. And then I cashed out refinance on that, the 64 unit that I have, and it was a big cash out. I think we got like almost $800,000 out of that one, and it's like a lot of it was my money. So,
oh, that you'd already invested in.
Exactly. Because I was so over budget on the property because I really wanted to do everything new, you know? So I was cool with it. Like, I'm fine with leaving that money in the deal. And that's probably one of my best deals I've ever done. Now that I'm refinanced. At that moment, it didn't feel that way.
You finished the project, stabilized, and refinanced. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
But yeah, man.
Yeah, that's a tough lesson to go through and learn.
It is. It was a very tough, but you know what? I think we all need to be tested.
Yeah.
You know, we all got to go through that to learn and grow. You know, if you're not growing and learning, then you're not going to be able to become better. You have to go over, you have to over leverage yourself. You have to you just have to go crazy and then learn from it. And just, I don't know. I think that's the reason why I am where I'm at, because I'm crazy, literally crazy, because you have to be insane to do this, because it doesn't mathematically pencil out. So that's the reality, you know. So you got to be insane, because if you were very smart, you would be like, this is illogical. So, but you got to be like that, and you got to be ballsy.
You do.
To get rich. You know, you're not going to get rich by being a conservative guy, you know, investing, you know, none of your money back into the business and just like taking risks. You got to actually just take risk, and that's how you're going to learn. You're going to get hit, and you're going to grow from it, you know.
Yeah.
By getting hit.
You got to bet on yourself.
You do.
You have to put yourself out there a little bit to be able to, at least a little bit, to be able to take it to the next step.
Yes.
Because if you don't do that, you're, like you said, you'll just never get rich.
No, you will not. And I realized this year, because I was like, hold on, I don't have any more money. And then I was like, hold on, I do have money. It's in all these assets that I own. You know, let's start selling them. I told my girl, I was like, let's list this, and this property. And then we started getting offers. We're like, sell them all. Like, I'm done. And then we cashed out all this money. And then we're like, okay, cool. Now we're fine. And I was like, no, we're not stopping. Sell more. So we started selling more. And I was like, okay, cool. Now I feel like I'm safe. So now I started using some of that money to pay off some of these other deals that I had. I had all these projects. And I was like, okay, this project needs another 30 grand here. This project needs another 40 grand here. So I have money in all these deals. So I was like, no, sell more for I could get, have now liquidity for me to feel safe for my family. You
know? So are these other projects like other adds to your portfolio? Or are these like flips, or what kind of projects are we talking?
So we bought a warehouse, and it's been a nightmare. Me and Jake Stein, we bought a warehouse and we ended up going way over budget. We thought we were going to not spend, you know, 200 and something thousand on the property. So we're at probably over 200. We're probably almost 300 on that.
Didn't y'all have a warehouse that burned down, or a building
that
burned
down?
That
one. That's that one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it was a nightmare, bro. But we're blessed. We ended up, you know, like I said, I ended up selling a bunch of assets to have the liquidity to feel like, hey, I can leave, you know, 60, 70,000 in that deal and I'm okay with it. It's not going to like affect my life. So that's where I had to get to. But if you think about it, I thought about this. You want to sell the assets that you already have a lot of equity in, right? You sell that equity and you get that money out of the walls. Now you're going and buying new assets that are going to give you more equity, right?
Yeah.
So that's, and I had to go back to my principles. Like, how did I get here? I was like, okay, I sold property. I did not keep property and got rich off of keeping property. I got rich because I ended up selling assets and moving them into new assets that have more equity. So that's how I grew, you know, like, okay, I sold all these houses. Now I'm buying, I bought the motel. I bought, we bought that warehouse. I bought this 32 unit with Derek, and I'm buying like other assets that are now going to give me in the future more money back. Like, and I was going to more than double that money.
For sure.
Instead of me just holding these assets and making $150, $200 a month, and I have 100 something thousand in equity just in the walls.
Yeah.
So it just, I realized this year that you have to move your money, man. There's no way around it.
You have to recycle it.
If the property is already has over 100K in equity, it's probably just better to walk away and just move that 100K into another asset.
But what about your appreciation on those assets and that sort of thing?
Okay. This is getting good right here. This is my favorite stuff. So I think that you have to forget about appreciation at this point until you get very rich. Once you're very rich, I believe you can have a bunch of assets and all that. But if you're not rich, sell it. Because you're going to take out that $100,000. Now you're going to go and buy, let's say you buy a $500,000 property or $1 million property with that $100,000. Now that $1 million property is going to turn into a $1.5 million property versus this little $100,000 property is going to turn into what? $120,000?
Yeah.
It's going to be, the increment is going to be smaller. So now you're maximizing you're growing your portfolio more, not just your portfolio, but your capital is growing. Your net worth, and not just your net worth, but you're starting to like double down. Your money is starting to grow more exponentially versus you just leaving that money in that property.
That's true. That is true. I mean, if you think about it, whenever we capture we get the most equity whenever we buy something that's distressed, we fix it up.
And you sell it.
And boom, you've created a ton of equity. To create that amount of equity would take you, and if you just held that property, to double that equity that you created, it's going to take you 10, 15 years.
And there you go. So you have to, and this is where I hit a wall, bro, because I was like, okay, look, I'm going to manage the property for 10 years, let's say, right? And I'm going to double my money. So why don't I take that $100,000 or let's say $50,000. Let's just say $50,000. I'm going to make another $50,000 in 10 years. But I got to deal with it. I got to hear about the tenant. I got to like, the AC went out. There's a roof. The hurricane hit it. All these different things. And it just doesn't make sense.
They move out overnight. They don't tell you and you find out a month later.
Yeah. Or they burned something in the unit. They didn't tell you. It has happened to me before. So many different things that happen. However, I do believe that you're not going to be able to sell everything. So if you own a bunch of real estate, sell what's liquidable. And then at the time, and then later in the future, sell what can be liquidable. Because you can sell something today, and next year, the other properties you have, you can sell now because it becomes more liquidable. And you can use that capital to start buying other assets or just use. So when do you get to the point where you could just enjoy your money?
Yeah.
So that's another thing I had to learn too, to just like, hey, I can spend $10,000. Like, it's not going to kill me.
Yeah. On something.
And that's a big shift for me. Cause the way I grew up, you know, and the way I was taught like to save and save and save, it was a big shift for me to like, hey, I can treat myself. I can like, you know, pay for a party or pay for this or pay for that. It's okay. Like I can treat myself. So yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I mean it's true what you're saying. It makes sense because like we were saying, you literally gain more equity in a property when you're buying it and doing the rehab and getting it stabilized. Mm-hmm. That's when you get all the equity in the property.
So think about this. So if you're buying, let's say you do 10 deals a year. If you would keep those 10 deals and let's say $700,000 of equity out of those 10 deals, and let's say you held them for 10 years, how much more equity do you think you'll get? Let's say you get double it. But what about if you get that $700,000 in equity? Let's say you don't get the $700,000, because let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. Let's say you get $500,000 out of that equity. That $500,000, you get it, and now you go and you buy a $3 million property with that $500,000. Now you have the confidence to buy it because you have $500,000 in the bank.
Yeah,
I can buy a $10 million property with that, I don't know about 10 million, but let's say 5 million, you could buy a $5 million property. Now you have 500,000 in reserves to buy a 100% deal. You're like, hey, I can float it for a year, no problem. I'm not stressing. I have that 500,000 just for this deal, and you're good.
Yeah.
Versus you trying to keep all those 10 units and then you try to go and buy a $5 million property with, let's say you have 100K in the bank. You're going to be stressing out. Yeah. So that's where I kind of like it clicked in my head. Like, I have to sell assets every year. It has to be like a constant recycling of properties. If I can't sell it, I'm just not buying it.
Yeah.
I have to have an end goal. That's my new strategy now.
Is to have an end goal for each one of your assets.
Yes. If I don't have an end goal, then it's not worth it. You know, like, I don't want to buy a property that is just going to sit there and deteriorate. And I'm just like, we're going back to when I first started. Like, I just put lipstick on a pig and it sits there. And then later I can't even sell this thing because it looks like crap.
Yeah.
And I can't sell it because now I'm stuck and I have this high loan and nobody will even buy it at what I owe. So now I'm even in a worse situation. So now I have to have an exit. I have to be like, hey, this property is worth this much. I'm going to spend this much, and I'm going to exit. Either I'm going to exit right now, or I'm going to exit in 5 years when the property reaches its max potential. Meaning right now, we can't sell multifamily that well. But in 3 years, this market might be rocking and rolling. For 5 years, too many things happen so fast. 5 years from now, they could be like willing to pay $150, $150,000 a door, and then we just sell all these assets and just cash in all this money.
Yep.
And then now you're just like, whoa, you go to another level now.
Right, because it'll be something else then.
Exactly. Now you have, imagine if you cash, I mean, if you sell all that asset, all that liquidity you'll have to be able to buy. Now you can just live off that money. My main goal really in the end is to get into developments. That's like within the next 3 years, I want to get into developments.
For sure.
Which we could talk about that another day.
Another day. Okay, we're about to have to close the show down. Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of thought that you want to leave our listeners or our viewers with to encourage them or get them going?
I think you just have to like never give up, man. I think that's probably the biggest advice I could give is just like, and study. Those two things are probably the most important things. Study your market. I always say this that when I'm speaking anywhere. Study your market. Study it and learn your market. If you cannot tell me a competent area and you can't tell me what it's worth, then you shouldn't be buying it.
Yeah.
Period. If you are buying something and you don't know what the value is, you need to not buy that. You need to know what the rents are. You need to know the values, you need to know the demographics, you need to know everything about that area. If you don't know it, don't buy it. You're just going to lose money, period, because somebody's telling you that it's worth something that is really not. So you have to be very cautious on what you're buying, and that's what I have to say.
Very well said. Everybody, thank you, Jonathan Jacone.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Sure.
Rounders, we'll see you next time.